This Bengals team is better than the Bengals team that went to the Super Bowl last year, but down three starting offensive linemen, might the offense start to resemble a little bit stylistically what we saw last year? We'll break that down, plus some guys stepping up on defense.
You are Locked On Bengals, your daily Cincinnati Bengals podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What up, Bengals fans, and welcome to another episode of the Locked On Bengals podcast. I'm your host, Jake Lisco, joined today by Mike Santagata at Bengals underscore Sans on Twitter, writing for allbengals.com, podcasting at Always Game Day in Cincinnati. Is that right? Do I have that right?
Well, my loyal listener, Jake Lisco, got it right. Yeah. It's
always Game Day in Cincinnati. Always Game Day in Cincinnati, competitor to Locked On Bengals, of course. We're available, free and available everywhere you get your podcasts and on YouTube. So make sure you hit that subscribe button on YouTube as the Bengals continue their playoff march, or hit the follow button anywhere you get your audio podcasts, and we'll be delivered to your devices daily. And you can join the First Listen Club with all the other Bengals fans who listen to the Locked On Bengals podcast. Brought to you today, by the way, by Bet Online, who has you covered this season with more props, odds, and lines than ever before. Bet Online is where the game starts. Mike, let's start today with the offensive line. Down three of those starters, as I mentioned, and it's starting to show itself, right? Jackson Carman at left tackle, not ideal. Hakeem Adeniji at right tackle, we thought was survivable based on week 18, was not quite as strong in the wild card game. And Max Sharping has a lot of experience, but could have played a little bit better, I think, at right guard as well. This offensive line kind of throwing the Bengals back into three-step dropback world. What do you think? You charted the game. Was it a reversion to the quick game? Is that going to be what's required?
Oh, yeah. All right. Anyway, I did the numbers. If you want to go do the numbers, do them yourself. I have a difference between quick game and a three-step drop. Quick game, you know, three-step drop, you're – quarterback footwork stuff here. I've watched a Chad Pennington video anyway, but you know, you're going to actually take that step back, crossover, and then final step. And you can even hitch on that. You don't hitch on quick game, never hitch on quick game. So quick game is still sometimes three steps because it's just kind of like, bah, 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 but it's more so like a one step or like a step and turn type thing. It's not like a true dropping back three steps. And also, there are concepts I consider quick game: stick, slant, flat, double slants, those type of spacing. So
go balls.
Sure. Although a lot of go balls are actually three step drops in my opinion, not like true quick game. Like okay. Quick game to me is short as well.
Like I feel like Burrow sometimes is throwing those.
Yeah, in one quick step. Game. But, man, the 2021 playoff showed us you can throw a quick game go ball.
Yeah, that's right.
But yeah, so 23 passes in the first half. I'm including anything with a penalty because I didn't – what matter? What difference does it make for this, really? They'll be excluding something that was called. So six quick game out of 23 in the first half. That's only 26%. I feel like that – I don't know the exact numbers for everybody, but that feels like somewhere close to average, right? Like if you told me 20% is the average quick game, I go, yeah, sure. And, you know, the Chargers and the Bengals are up around 25, somewhere around there. Five-step drops. This is the big one, which is 21.7% of the pass attempts. And then they had two RPOs, a screen, and then 8 3-step drops and a play-action pass. So the 8 3-step drops are 35%. But we're just going to focus on the quick game real quick. So 26% quick game in the first half. Jonah Williams goes down basically right at halftime is that whole thing. Second half, 10 pass attempts of quick game on 18 pass attempts. 55.5% of the pass attempts were quick game, not three-step drops. I have three-step drops. They ran 5 3-step drops, which is 27.8% of the pass attempts in the second half. And I'm including both two-point conversions, which were both quick game. I know the one, he like does a whole thing. They wanted stick flat there with a jet. Like he wanted to take a one step and throw the flat route, but the Ravens covered it. So went and made something happen. 1 5-step drop. And it was the play that Jackson Carman gave up a sack.
Immediately.
And like they were still giving up sacks and pressures in the 5-step drops in the first half, but like they were also hitting things and they felt comfortable running that. So You're talking about over half of your pass attempts are quick game. That sounds a lot like last year's playoffs. And I know there's quite an opinion that Jackson Carmen was fine and he was better than expected, but that is so protected. that is, you are not actually going to have to pass set here. And when he was asked to do a 5-step drop pass protection, like a true pass protection situation, gave up a sack. So that's, I think, where the opinion gets a little inflated on him. And I don't think the running back was trying to chip there, although the broadcast said that. So, yeah, what does that sound like to you with the 56% quick game after 26% in the first half?
Sounds like Joe Burrow is going to need to continue to play at a very, very fast pace to keep this passing offense going. And I think it goes through the passing offense. The run game, you know, there are a few nice plays, and we can talk about some of them if we have time here. Crunch, one that we talked about last week, beautiful. The pistol wide zone that I know you tweeted about, really nice. So they had a couple pieces that were really good, but overall, the run game doesn't look like it's going to come save the day. So it is, I think, going to be on Joe Burrow. And we'll talk about Joe Burrow in a few minutes, because I thought he played really well. And we'll talk about why he played really well. Before we get there, though, Mike, let's talk about some of these individual linemen, those three that stepped in. I mean, we talked before we started recording, Calais Campbell looked like 10 years younger, prime Calais Campbell, absolutely dominant in the trenches. The tackles both had issues after Jonah Williams went down, and Jonah Williams had his own issues in this game, not to absolve him entirely. That's not the point, but he's not likely playing next week. So we're going to focus on Jackson Carmen, Hakeem Adeniji, and Max Sharping. How did you think those guys played? What would your assessment be in terms of projecting them for this Bills matchup?
Okay. Varying levels of not good.
All right. Very good. Next question. Yeah. No, keep going.
But yeah. So Hakeem Adeniji, I feel like you could have some faith in a bounce back, right? Because he played at least fine the past two times he was asked to play this year at right tackle. This game was bad. Like, it wasn't good. Let's just call it what it is. But even in the limited plays in that Bills game, he was solid. Like, he didn't allow a single pressure. He was holding his own against their best pass rusher. Like, that's what you're hoping for. The issue is now, instead of just one guy, you're like, oh, I hope that guy steps up because he's an unknown. There's two more. And whether that's Carmen or Prince or whoever is going to play left tackle, or it could be Adeniji with some type of weird flip. But I don't think Sharping played well. I don't think it was – I wouldn't list it as a disaster. I thought it was just a normal level of bad, not good, below average. Whatever you want to use for that. What's the nicest way to
say? Tough game
against Calais Campbell. That's right. That's the way I'll frame that. Because the Bills don't have a guy like Calais Campbell. They've got Ed Oliver. They've got they have Daquan Jones, I believe, yes. who really flashed on a couple plays. They've got just a few guys like that, and like that, you know, that's great. Those are guys, they can flash and they can win reps. Calais Campbell is like, I don't know, I want to say 13, but I'm probably wrong, year veteran, who he's going to dominate guys without experience. And then I know Sharping's had experience, but not like that much. And yeah, he had his way with the entire interior.
He was ragdolling people. Like we have the fun reps of you know, Logan Wilson laying out Linderbaum and DJ Reader tackling a running back with Linderbaum.
Yeah.
But Calais Campbell is doing that to pretty much everybody. Luckily, they won't see an old man strength Calais Campbell next week.
Right. These guys are young. They haven't developed that old man strength yet.
Yeah, that's right.
The one rep where they barely got the first down with P. Ryan, it was like the third play of the game. Yeah. Sharping literally gets thrown aside, and Campbell's the one who makes the tackle, but Sharping comes in and pushes them both over.
Which, great second reaction.
Good save. Good right? save. That's a great way to make up for it. And then Carmen, I think, is the elephant in the room of, I don't think he played well. I don't think he was the worst lineman on the field, but he was very protected too. Like, if you want to say Adeniji or Sharping were the worst ones on the field, they also had to block those five-step drops in the first half. They had to block more three-step drops in the first half. That was 8 3-step drops to 5, and that's not even much. That's just, that ball should be out in 2.5 seconds, but it is more than the quick game, which is out there in like 2 seconds. So they really protected in that second half. It really felt like they kind of turtled up a little bit of like, we can't run the offense anymore. And that just light bulb going off in the head of like, oh, this is exactly how I felt like the Bengals felt in the playoffs last year, where we can't actually run our offense. Like, we have to protect these guys so much. And that doesn't mean you can never push the ball down the field. Obviously you can. 2021 playoffs showed that. And I think this team's better. Like, even with the injuries, I still think this offense is better as a unit, because Burrow is a much better quarterback. So what is more well designed, and T and Chase are both better players right now than they were back then. And Hurst can stretch the field a little bit more than Uzama was able to. But when you're looking at just the macro view, the big picture, it feels a lot like it did in 2021, of like, they have to run a quick game and they have to move the pocket and do these things to just make sure that the offensive line won't ruin the game with a 9-sack performance.
We'll stay on this topic coming up next, because speaking of 9-sack performances, that's what the Bengals saw in the divisional round last year against Tennessee. And you have a stylistically, there's some similarities with the Buffalo front. We'll get into some of that. In addition to Joe Burrow's performance and why there's some reason for optimism, it's not all doom and gloom. That's not the takeaway here. We'll get to that next. Today's episode brought to you by Ultimate Football GM. You've heard us talk about it before, the mobile game app that lets you take over your own professional football franchise. So if you're not happy about the way the Bengals constructed their offensive line depth this year, go do it yourself on Ultimate Football GM, and you can compete with other people in leagues, start a group with your friends. Responsible, of course, for all the ins and outs of controlling an NFL franchise, including hiring the right coaches and coordinators, trading players, getting through that NFL draft. And we're not quite to draft season yet, but it is around the corner, coming in a month or so. Navigate your team to the peak of the professional football league. For Locked On Bengals listeners, you can get into a special competition and win amazing prices. So stay tuned for some details there. Locked On Bengals listeners get a 100% free boost to their franchise when using promo code Locked On in the game store. That's Locked On in all caps in the game store. You can access the game there or at ultimate-gm.com. Ultimate Football GM, start your dynasty today. All right, Mike. So let's stay on the topic of offensive line and changing the way the offense is going to have to operate for just a second before we get to Joe Burrow, because I'm thinking about those stunts, thinking about the blitz percentages. I saw a good stat about this where the who had it? I think it was Andrew Russell, where the Bills like to stunt and blitz at a similar rate to the Titans last year. Obviously, that didn't go well for the Bengals. The Titans' defensive front probably definitely more talented than the Bills' defensive front that we're going to see this week. Much more disruptive. Had a better track record last year. Different kind of defense, though, stylistically, than the Ravens, who there's been a lot of talk this week, Mike, that they're a defense that schematically, from a personnel perspective, is probably one of the harder matchups for the Bengals in this postseason, in the AFC side of things anyway. So they changed to be a quick game dominant team against the Ravens. Is that necessarily the case against the Bills? Is it going to be, you know, quick game stuff throwing underneath the whole game? Are there going to be those shots to scheme things up downfield? What do you think?
I don't think the Bills front is as imposing as the Ravens front, or really even in the same tier. Since Von Miller's gone down, I see Miami hold up fine with Gregory Rousseau and Ed Oliver and these guys. They are not wrecking a game, and Miami is not starting a world beater at right tackle. Sam Hubbard put that guy into the ground.
That's a really bad offensive line, actually.
Other than Teron Armstead and a little bit of Connor Williams and whatever you feel about Robert Hunt, I guess, left guard and right tackle are an issue on that offensive line, like a big issue. Does that sound? Not left guard, but you know, the right tackle, they didn't take advantage of it with Miami. And Miami does different stuff from the Bengals. They play a lot of RPOs, but they push the ball down the field still. Like, Skylar Thompson was taking his shots. So I haven't watched that game back over, but when you look at what Miami's able to do against that defensive front, you could really build the picture here that the Bengals can probably do something similar here against that, at least be able to push the ball down the field at times. The 5-step drop thing, I think you can get to more. I think you can get to more against Buffalo's front than you could against the Ravens. And I think you should too, because Buffalo, they like to press their corners, I think, a bit more than Baltimore does. I think there's more opportunities. The Ravens really don't want to give up deep balls for the most part. Like, there are opportunities, and the Bengals took a few of those. But for the most part, they are going to play top down. You're staying in front. And that's why I think the Bengals ran so many stops and hitches and curls. Because
they were there.
Like, if you're giving it to me, I'm going to take it. The Bills don't do that as much. Like, you can beat them over the top. And plenty of teams have shown it. So in Miami with a leaky offensive line showed it. If they had a better quarterback play or better receiving, Jalen Waddle, I don't know why he kept jumping for those, they would have been able to attack them deep down the field. So I think you can get to some of these five-step drops. Now, you probably can't do as many as you wanted to, as you'd like to, but maybe you even get to a little bit of seven-man protection here. Wad everything up, especially these blitzes. Like, I'm still not worried about the Bengals facing a blitz. Stunts, yes, especially on the right side. And even the left side now that Jonah's down, because you don't have the communication. That's really what that's stressing. When you're bringing the stunts, you're going to stress the communication of that front, and it's all new guys. Every piece other than Volson and Karras is not going to have the same level of communication as it was 5 weeks ago. Yeah. So if they're going to stress the communication, then that could be an issue. But if they're going to bring blitzes, and even these creepers and sims, I don't think are the best answer to this Bengals offense, because this was, I think, a great point that I think it was Nate Tice or Robert Mays, great podcast, Athletic Football Show, brought up about Burrow just has the insane spatial awareness. Like, this guy has come out of the coverage shell. So while this guy's dropping, they're trying to squeeze over to it. There's an opening and I can throw that. And the same with blitzes. Like, these guys have all come down. I know where I can go with this ball. When it's an actual, they're covering every blade of grass. That's how you can get them, because before he can find the opportune throw, they can get home. And then that's what I think the issue for this could be. And the Bengals offensive line could give them that issue, but I just think the Bills front is not as imposing as what they just faced.
Yeah, it'll be really interesting to see what the Bills approach is to this game, because they're such a schematically different defense than what the Ravens do in so many ways. But Joe Burrow playing at a really high level, didn't have the gaudy numbers, didn't have the deep completions, didn't have the, you know, 50-yard downfield throwing with the flick of the wrist on the run or whatever. Though there were actually, if you watch the tape, maybe a couple opportunities for that, would have been really challenging. And I don't fault Joe Burrow for not pulling the trigger on those throws. But he his one deep attempt on the right sideline to T. Higgins could have been caught, could have been called a penalty, was pretty good in the intermediate part of the field, was, in my opinion, pretty darn good with his decision-making in that quick game of getting to the right spot quickly, especially that first draft, that first drive out of halftime. I thought really good for Burrow, getting the ball to where it needed to be on time, as we talked about with him, right, all year, knowing who he is, knowing where the ball needs to go. Against a defense that has one of the few defenses, maybe the only defense this year, that really can cause him to hesitate consistently and get him to reconsider as they change the picture really well. What did you think of the way that Burrow played in this game overall, Mike, despite the numbers being what they were?
Fantastic. I mean, this was it has such a negative connotation, but it was like perfect game management.
Quarterbacking.
Yeah. Okay. Perfect quarterbacking. But yeah, like, he does all the really good quarterback stuff, you know, like, he's perfectly on time. He's pretty much perfectly accurate. Even the throws that weren't like 100% on the numbers, like the chase drop, hard catch.
That's like, an accurate throw, I think. It's like an overthrow where he's getting hit.
And it was high because he had to get it over a defensive lineman dropping. So he's like, I don't have time to hold on to this for him to get through to the next window. I'm going to put this where he can get it. And I know my guy can get that, and just didn't come down with it. But I don't recall very many inaccurate throws. I don't recall very many bad decisions, if any. Like, I don't think he ever put the ball in harm's way, I want to say. I don't remember any defender tipping the ball before, you know, like, oh, that should have been picked type situations. So, like, if you get that level of mind, you know, cerebral quarterback play to go with the ability to actually push that ball down the field because the offensive line can hold up and you're able to take those shots, then I think you'll get, like, these A-plus Burrow games that he's performed before. I think he was that locked in. He was going to give that level of game, but, you know, everything just kind of fell apart around him. So I feel fine about him going as Buffalo, though. Like, when you look at what he did against them in the Monday Night Football matchup, he was like 4 of 4, a touchdown, and well, I think he was over 10 yards an attempt. And when you watched it, you're like, oh my goodness, Burrow is just processing this so fast. Like, they try to bring a blitz, seem to Hayden Hurst. They try to, you know, they try to play quarters, and he's got Tyler Boyd on a post route in the end zone, easy touchdown. Like, it just felt like he knew the answer to everything they tried to throw at him.
Felt like the Bengals coaching staff had a better feel for how to deal with what Buffalo wanted to do on defense. And it's going to be interesting. Zach Taylor talked about this in his press conference, to prepare for this game for both teams, where they both have like this half quarter of tape, which, you know, they showed some things because they're expecting to play a game. But even in that game, you could also say, you know, both teams might be trying to protect some things, anticipating a potential playoff rematch, although that may be a hard argument to make. But maybe a little bit more on Joe Burrow, maybe a little bit more on this offense matchup against the Bills. We're going to get to the defense, because I thought some guys really stepped up, despite it not being perfect or necessarily pretty at times against the Ravens. I thought that some guys did some things worth talking about. So we'll finish the show there next. Today's episode of Locked On Bengals brought to you by Bet Online, your number one source for sports betting info, stats, news, and analysis. You can get the latest odds and trends for every professional and amateur league out there, from pro football, which, come on, we're in the playoffs. It's time to figure out your pro football betting, to basketball. They've got it all at BetOnline. They're the fastest and easiest way to get all of your sports betting info. So head to the website today or use your mobile device to learn more at BetOnline, where the game starts. Mike, let's spend a few more minutes here on the offense really quick before we get to the defense. As usual, we get a little bit behind schedule. That just is okay. That's how we do. Let's talk big picture offense-defense matchup. You said you're not worried about Burrow. You're not as worried about the defensive front of the Bills. And of course, like, you know, there's some good players still. We're not saying that those aren't issues at all. There will be plays made probably in the trenches by the Bills. They certainly have a matchup there that they're going to like. But coaching staff-wise, and even Burrow approach-wise, it felt like they had a really good feel for what Buffalo wanted to do. And I know we didn't get to the, you know, Bills fans are probably saying, oh, the Buffalo DVOA on defense in the first quarter is awful, and they're great from the second quarter to the fourth quarter, and we didn't get to see all those adjustments, and there will be a chess match. But big picture, do you still like this matchup for the Bengals offense?
I do, although I don't want it to sound like I think the Bengals offensive line and these guys are going to dominate the Bills front. Like, I just think they're not going to get beat as bad. But yeah, I like the Bengals offense in this matchup. I think they can hold up. If they don't, I think we know what it'll be. But If you trust that the offensive line can hold up, then I trust this coaching staff and Joe Burrow to be able to put up points against this defense.
There you go. On the other side, it's trickier, right? What I've said, and I told you before we started recording, all week, every time anyone's asked me about it, which is two or three times now, this game looks like big picture. You could say it might come down to Josh Allen turnovers, his ball security, which has been suspect all season, versus the Bengals' ability to protect Joe Burrow. Because both teams have the potential to be explosive on offense, and both teams have some flaws that can shoot that explosiveness in the foot. When Buffalo has the ball, though, the Bengals defense, while it wasn't great, started to get, you know, they got the big game-winning play that they needed, right, when they needed it, which is somehow this team's calling card, even if that's not something that's necessarily predictable or sustainable. But I was really impressed with the defensive depth. The defensive line depth in particular. Akeem Davis-Gaither obviously comes off the bench and has a huge pick in this game as well. All over the place, we're seeing guys stepping up, in my opinion, on this defense. Linebackers continuing to play well. Jesse Bates now getting that playoff Jesse Bates level performance, right? What were the big takeaways for you from the defense? And I guess when I ask that, I'm thinking about insofar as they impact how you feel about the matchup with Buffalo.
Yeah, so I don't think the Bills will be able to even really They have a fullback and whatever. I don't think they're even going to really be able to attempt to scheme Mike Hilton off the field the same way the Ravens were able to be a little bit successful with that in the first half, because they were able to – they got the Bengals to think and put Dax Hill on the field to cover a tight end because they're thinking of the length and the height and the matchup there. They don't want the 5'9" corner on him, and they're thinking about, you know, in base, we want to get the extra linebacker, extra defensive lineman on the field. But in the second half, it felt so much more like we're going to match this one with Mike Hilton on the field because that's one of our best players, and let's get him out there. Just reminded me of the great remember the Titans where they pulled Ryan Gosling off the field and sent out Petey Jones from Scrubs the running back. But it's just like, yeah, we gotta pull you off, we're putting Petey in there because that was back because they went spread or whatever. But you know, we're sending Petey out. That's Mike Hilton to me. Like, that's Petey. We're sending Petey out there, and then it just completely changed the defense. Like, the defense went from, I want to say, a bad first half. They were getting long drives, and they got the pick. But other than that, it was like long drives, touchdown, field goal. Into, they gave up a long drive, and then they got the huge fumble recovery for a touchdown on that. They gave up, but they're forcing punts. There were no punts in that first half, so they were able to actually get the Ravens offense off the field. That's just such a big one. And Mike Hilton was a big one, big reason. They were trying a bunch of different blitzes and stuff in that first half. And then they brought in Mike Hilton to run those same blitzes, and he gets a TFL, and he gets a sack that basically kills a drive because they run the ball on 2nd and 20.
And get this on the Mike Hilton splits: 27 snaps, 33% of those, 9 of them pass rushing snaps, according to PFF charting. Talking about trying to find a way to get him onto the field and using him creatively. That's an on-the-fly adaptation for this Bengals defensive coaching staff. And another big one that was pointed out by the announcers is Cam Sample getting additional reps for Trey Hendrickson. He actually outsnapped Trey Hendrickson in this game, which I hope is nothing to do with Trey Hendrickson's health. That is a fear. He did continue to play. He didn't like leave the game entirely or anything. So it could have certainly been a matchup thing. And he held up really well. Cam Sample and Zach Carter with this late season emergence. Tell me about these young guys on the defensive line.
They're awesome. I mean, not only the Bengals got very creative in the second half, because it wasn't just Cam Sample replacing Hendrickson at times. They also put B.J. Hill on the edge and had basically bring him back to the package.
Who, by the way, played 60 out of 69 snaps on the defensive line.
Yeah, because they needed him on edge sometimes. So it's like him going to the bench turned into him going out wide and not having to take on double teams. Just, you know, take a single team. You're fine with this one. You don't got to rush the passer. He was awesome too. And Cam Sample, this was almost like a breakout game for him to me. I mean, he was just beating all these blocks in the run game. And that kind of plays into his strength a little bit. I think he's a little bit more of a run defender than he is a pass rusher. More of the Sam Hubbard mold than the Trey Hendrickson mold. Mm-hmm. But they needed two Sam Hubbards out there, because the Ravens, Trey Hendrickson's awesome. He is one of the best pass rushers in the NFL. Mm-hmm. He is not the best run defender. And it's just, you know, he doesn't feel the double team coming. He can get sealed off. Cam Sample gave way more of a fight. He had one rep where the Ravens, because they have Tyler Linderbaum, so of course they can do this, they run center tackle power or counter, center tackle counter. So the center tries to kick out the end, and the tackle's going to try to wrap through and get to the linebackers. Cam Sample not only destroys the Tyler Linderbaum kick out, he makes the tackle on it. Like, they tried to kick him out, and he throws Linderbaum aside and makes the tackle, or at least the first one there. He wasn't just piling on. Like, he was first contact on a tackle, not for a loss, because the Bengals defense gets a lot of zero-yard gains and not a lot of these losses, but just awesome. That was way up there in my mind of these defensive linemen performing. And then, yeah, Zach Carter's having his breakout the past couple games. He was getting over top of reach blocks. It feels like the game's slowing down for Carter. I think Sample has kind of had that. But for Carter, early on, it felt like the game's just moving fast. And that's just, you know, SEC football is as close to NFL as you can get in college. But that is not the NFL, and it's different offenses, everything. Zach Carter, it just feels like the game's slowing down because he can feel the double teams coming. He did the DJ Reader drop to Anita Anchor on a play and absorbed that double team. He is getting over top of reach blocks and making stops. Just, he made, I think, 5 tackles in the game, and 3 of them were for 2 yards or less.
Pretty incredible. Pretty great game for Cam Sample. He's credited with, let's see, where did it go? Two stops for PFF, which is pretty good for a defensive lineman. Logan Wilson, though, had a pretty monster game himself, credited with five defensive stops. Obviously, the big forced fumble, giving up only half of targets where he is the closest defender, which is, I believe, the way PFF charts this, as catches. Had the linebackers play outside of the big play. That we've talked this big play to death, and it's great, and we'll talk about it again. We don't need to rehash that one right now. Credit Jermaine Pratt, Logan Wilson. But how did they play outside of that in this game?
Well, Wilson was awesome and got thrown. He had a pancake on the interception return. Huge sure one, too. So, yeah, he was awesome. And he was making stops. He's the only issue with the linebackers is I don't think they come off blocks super well. And the Ravens do a really good job of getting to them. Unlike it feels like most teams have issues getting to those linebackers because of Reeder and Hill. So they didn't do a great job there. Everything else was awesome. When they're unblocked, when they're kept clean, they made stops. And Pratt had my favorite play, other than the big one, my favorite play between the two, where he drops in a hook zone. It was cover three. And so there's a guy that's going to – almost every offensive comp is similar. But there's a guy trying to clear him out, and there's a guy coming behind it that's the target of this route, and there's eye candy underneath. So they want to put him in a bind, like run with that guy or take the underneath because so we can hit this. And it was at the end of the game. This was the play he made the big diving tip on. But everything before the tip is just as cool as the jumping tip because he gets in the window of the clear out and then falls off of that back into the window. It was a dig, a deep in route. He gets in the window of the deep in route. And then the ball's still thrown there because Huntley thinks linebacker's going to clear out. Let me hit the vacated space. Doesn't vacate the space, gets up there and makes an awesome play on the ball. Just has to be up there for reasons the Bengals won this game because then I believe that then forced what was that then to second down, then the holding call, or was that third and 20? I don't remember which one, but it was on that drive. It was on the they're not going to tie the game. They're going to try to win the game, but let's not allow the Ravens a chance to win this game. And that's he made a jumping tip in a really good coverage drop.
Yeah, there's a lot of guys you could talk about making plays in this game. J.T. Fele had a really good run play where he gets a stuff. Akeem Davis-Gaither, obviously the interception we talked about. Jesse Bates chasing down Tyler Huntley, keeping him out of the end zone. Von Bell on the next play, right? The one area that needs to be better next week is the outside corners. Can't have Eli Apple biting on a sluggo.
Oh, it was barely a sluggo too, man. It was like a little – just like that. you got to sell that a little more.
And, you know, like I also kind of get it because you're not expecting the Ravens and Tyler Huntley to try to beat you on double moves, right? Like that's not the mindset the corners are probably in this game, but they probably need to play a little bit better. DeMarcus probably Jones need to tackle a little bit better. And you know, Stephon Diggs, Josh Allen, there's a different beast there. Got to cover every blade of grass. Going to be a very different game defensively. Jesse Bates talked about it too, but you know, the things that you can take away from one game to the next, I think, are the defensive line, these young guys on the defensive line. If these guys can be dudes that are not just kind of like, all right, we need to get our starters some rest. They can actually go out there and play some solid plus football. That's huge. That's a huge development for this team, both in the playoffs and going forward. So that'll be fun to watch in the rest of this playoff run as well. Coming up next on Locked On Bengals, James Rapine and Joe Marino from Locked On Bills will have our Thursday crossover episode coming to you as we take our first look at the biggest stories and biggest matchups in this Bills-Bengals sort of rematch, making up the game that wasn't in Week 17, and that'll be the divisional round. That crossover coming to you next time here on Locked On Bengals. So go find Mike at Bengals_Sands. Go find his podcast, go find his writing, and he'll be back with us hopefully for some more film talk in the future. Until next time, Bengals fans, hoo day, and have a good one.